Hello, and welcome to the pilot episode of Spitball. Your quick weekly quickfire round up of the week's NFL action. I'm your host, Adri Bullhawk Mallows, and joining me is EJ the Hood Elgin. How are the tricks, young man?
Adri, good speaking to you from across the pond. Greatly looking forward to this 2012-2013 season. This preseason has been an absolute teaser. A, because the starters don't play the full game, and B, they kind of half-ass it. So, looking forward to the regular season starting in about 2 weeks.
Yeah, likewise, man. I think one of our great coaches, Marv Levy, always said, if you're winning in preseason, you're losing in the season. If you're losing preseason, you're going to have a good season. So, hopefully that's a good motto for the Bills, and as we're 0-2 in preseason. So, let's see what happens, buddy. Okay, so, our aim every week is to provide you with a fun, speedy roundup of all the week's action from around the league. On the subject of all things funny and humour, you can't help but think about Tim Tebow. So, bearing in mind that Tim Tebow doesn't have a NFL quality arm, in my opinion, young man, do you think he should perhaps be just used in the Wildcat formation?
Great first question, Adri, and not a big surprise that we start off with probably the biggest story in the NFL year after year is Tim Tebow. What an interesting enigma he is, because, like you said, lack of an NFL quality arm. I mean, yet somehow he pulls off victories, and somehow he has the intangibles to get the players around him playing as hard as they do. So, I don't know if you've happened to watch the Jets at all this preseason, but they are the only team thus far that have yet to score an NFL touchdown. So at this point, you know, not only should Tim Tebow possibly be looked into being used in the Wildcat, but also taking over Mark Sanchez, because they right now are in dire need of some playmakers. And sadly, it's probably going to come down to Tim Tebow having to do that, because Mark Sanchez, he will be on a very short leash. And if he's unsuccessful, that New York relentless crowd, they will boo him off the field and want Tebow to see what he can do. So sadly, it's almost like Tim Tebow's going to be starting again in the NFL.
But do we think, just quickly on that, I mean, how quickly do you think it would take before he would take over from Sanchez? Are we talking, do you think Rex Ryan's going to ditch him after a couple of weeks? Bear in mind, this is the guy that I think he does get a bit of unfair stick, Sanchez, because let's not forget, in his first three seasons in the NFL, he took the Jets to the AFC Championship game, so should that just be overlooked after three games because you've got Tim Tebow, or should it get a little bit longer based on the fact that he had
success? Great point. You know, the good news is bringing in Tim Tebow lit a little bit of a fire under his ass, and having to compete more at practice. And from what I hear, he's commanding more of a presence in the huddle. So personally, I do kind of want Mark Sanchez to have a good season, but that's a great question. I don't know when Rex Ryan would pull the plug. I'm thinking maybe four games would be a good test for Sanchez. And then after that, if you think about it, if they start off 0-4, they're going to have to change their plans to start thinking about, you know, getting into the playoffs. So we'll see, man. That's going to be one of the big storylines in the NFL this year. So let me counter with this. Speaking of quarterbacks, I know your thoughts on Eli Manning, but using your best judgment, who do you think will have the better NFL season this year, Peyton Manning or his brother Eli?
Well, it's a very good question, my friend, and despite my thoughts for Eli, which I will fill the listeners in at some point, based around the fact that he's an easy target and very easy to take the mickey out of, but we'll come back to that at another stage. Last year, you can't question Eli Manning. Pressure situations, third, fourth down, Super Bowl, he was the quarterback on form. It nailed it on the money every time. But last time he won the Super Bowl, they tailed off the following year. Peyton Manning's coming back with a point to prove. He's getting a lot of stick about the receivers he has to throw to, and will he still be the same quarterback with a bad neck? I think the simple answer to that is yes. I don't think you lose his ability, which is predominantly his mental ability for reading the play, reading the defences, and then making the adjustments in the line. You don't lose that just because you've got a bad neck. And I think Denarius Thomas is going to have a phenomenal season with someone like Manning who can throw in the ball. I mean, what do you think there, fella? I mean, do you think that's a valid point? Or I think it would be Peyton, but...
So you do think it's going to be Peyton, and you're using sound judgment, not because you dislike Eli?
Yeah, I have to say, I think purely just based on the fact that given after the Super Bowl, just tailing off because not very many people make it back the following year. And I don't know whether the Giants will have it in them this year. Eli Manning will have a good season. I hope he does reasonably well because I've got him as one of my fantasy quarterbacks. But I just think Peyton will have the best year because he's got more points to prove.
Yeah, it's hard to root against Peyton Manning, who's, you know, a shoe-in Hall of Famer, without a doubt. I don't know, Adri. With Peyton coming back with that, he still hasn't had a hit to the head or to his neck yet. And I'm not sure if he'll be fragile with that or if he'll be able to bounce back up with that. Eli Manning has so many weapons around him that I don't think Peyton Manning does. The only thing that's going against Eli is he's in, I think, personally, one of the tougher divisions in the NFL East. So I'm going to probably go with you on that one, and the fact that statistically I do think Peyton Manning will have a good year. But Eli Manning, I still think, will have the better team.
Yeah, that's a fair assessment, I think, there, fella. And I think just moving on from that, I think one final, we can touch on the quarterbacks one final time with the other two quarterbacks that have been making the headlines this year, with obviously their recent draft at number one and number two. For you, who will win the battle between Andrew Luck and RG3?
Oh, man, I love this question. Love this question. I am a huge fan of both quarterbacks. They're both very well-proven, high-character guys from college, where they were well-schooled. I believe they were both Heisman candidates at one point, and I know Robert Griffin is the reigning Heisman Trophy winner from college. So they're both, you know, high-athlete guys, high-intelligent guys, who I think will make the transition rather seamlessly. RG3 is an exciting, dynamic player. The one thing that scares me with him is that he's doesn't carry a lot of weight to him, so I don't know how many hits he'll be able to take. However, he's in a Shanahan system. He's got some decent playmakers around him, and I really think in this system where they're going to spread the field similar to where they did with him at Baylor University, I think he will get to experience some success. But keep in mind, Adri, that he's also in the NFC East with some rather stout defense with the Giants and the Cowboys and the Eagles. So it's going to be an eye-opening experience for him. Now, Andrew Luck, they've been telling him, I hear on the radio, that he's the best quarterback prospect to come out since like Dan Marino or John Elway. He's just that well-schooled. He has multiple skill sets. The one thing he does have going for him with him in Indianapolis is Bruce Arians is his offensive coordinator, who was the offensive coordinator for Ben Roethlisberger for many, many years. And you see how successful he was with Big Ben. So I think that's going to help the transition process for Andrew Luck is having Bruce Arians as an OC, offensive coordinator. The only thing that's going to suck for Andrew Luck is, well, A, he's following a legend. He'll always be compared to Peyton Manning, which is very, very difficult, a Hall of Famer. Two, he has the stigma of being a number one draft pick, so he'll, if he even has an average season, it will be considered a bust pick. And the third thing is playmakers. You know, his running backs are Donald Brown. Not a whole lot of people even know Donald Brown. He may be successful this
although
year.
He did score a touchdown on his first play from scrimmage in preseason.
Yeah, hey, good memory. And he actually finished up the season pretty good last year. But receiver, their top receiver is Reggie Wayne, as you know, who is probably nearing retirement, so he doesn't have the same kind of speed to his game. And the number two receiver under Peyton Manning for the longest time, Pierre Garçon, no longer is in Indy, and go figure, is actually in Washington, and it will be a receiver for RG3. Austin Colley had a concussion in the preseason, and he's had concussion symptoms in the past, so he's probably done for the year with that. So just not a whole lot of guys to throw the ball to in Indy. So we'll see.
Help me out here. Am I right in thinking that that Indianapolis have drafted two tight ends so they can try and work a similar system to New England?
Very good. And actually one of which I know is his name's Kobe Fleener, who was Andrew Luck's tight end at Stanford. So they'll have a good bond and they'll probably be able to be successful together. But I think statistically and for record, it will both go to RG3 this year. However, as the Colts develop the talent around Andrew Luck, I do think, just having watched him, he just does not look like your typical rookie in the pocket. He's very, very well tooled. You know, and my only other thing I want to mention about this.
Okay. One final question on Luck before we move on. Going back to the point you're making about the offensive coordinator now, Luck and Roethlisberger, from what I've seen, they're slightly different style of quarterbacks. So will he be developing a different scheme, or do you think Luck could adjust to, say, the scheme he produced to a more mobile quarterback in Roethlisberger? Because Roethlisberger is great at making plays on his feet, but Luck does seem more like the pocket presence of a Manning. So do you think that there'll be a conflict there, or will Luck be able to adjust?
You know, and that's a great question, but this may be hard to believe, but believe it or not, Bruce Arians' system for Big Ben, I think he even mentioned it at one point, was he would design the play, but it was then Big Ben that would make the play continue. So a lot of the times when you saw Big Ben scrambling out of the pocket or getting the ball off with three or four guys hanging on him was because that's the skill set Big Ben had. So it's going to be the same system, and it's just a matter of, will Andrew Luck be able to make the play continue, or will he have to, you know, pass it to the first or second read because he doesn't have the strength like Big Ben did to, you know, shield the defenders off of him. So it should be interesting. You know, Bruce Arians, he's well respected, even though he didn't get to keep his job at Pittsburgh. But I'm thinking he'll be able to put together quite a good scheme for Andrew Luck to be successful. The only other tidbit I want to say, Adri, is Jim Irsay, the Colts owner, has been tweeting this past week that there's going to be a big trade, and that the whole city of Indianapolis right now is excited as to who that trade could be, but it has to be someone on the offensive side of the ball. So we'll see if that actually goes through or not.
No worries. Put an analogy on Luck and RG3.
Yeah,
I'm sure you have another question in the hood for me.
Right, and you may have heard me in my answer here with RG3 that he was playing in what I personally believe to be the hardest division in the NFL. What do you think is the hardest division in the NFL? And you better not say the AFC East.
Oh, the AFC East. No, that's not hard. The Bill should win that every year, but somehow we managed to find a way not to. And that's more about us not being able to than it being a good division. No, don't get me wrong. The Patriots are a phenomenal side. Brady, Gronkowski, Hernandez. The names reel off the tongue, but on a serious note, division-wise, I think AFC North for me is a tough division, barring Cleveland. When you look at Cincinnati, the work they're putting in now with Dalton and Green, and they've got a great defense. I feel obviously you've got the Ravens, who are just phenomenal, and I have to say a good word about Ray Lewis, who I recently met. Nice little plug there, Mick Foley style. And Pittsburgh obviously trying to rebuild, so we'll have to wait and see. I think that's going to be a tough division, but isn't necessarily the toughest. On the flip side, you also have the NFC North with Chicago, Green Bay, Minnesota. But you know what? I think to try and keep it as a relatively short answer, the more I think about it, the more the NFC East probably is the toughest division in football, because year on year you do have four teams that could win that division. You can't look past any of them. They can all beat each other. They all have great sides. And it's just, this is sort of, again, going back to the point on Eli Manning, really, why Peyton will have a better year, because, as we've said a couple of times now, the NFC East is such a competitive division. You just don't know which way it's going to go. Giants were great last year. Could it be the Cowboys? Could Romo finally have a great year? Has he sold his soul to the devil? Who knows what will happen? Michael Vick suddenly find the form he had 2 years ago?
Can he stay healthy?
Will RG3 come straight out not being drafted first and say, well, actually, this is why you should have drafted me. So it'll be interesting.
I'm surprised you didn't say the NFC West, man. Are you sure the Rams and the Seahawks and the they didn't ring a bell, man?
That's a real toughie, isn't it? Yeah, that's going to be a real hard division.
Do you remember 2 seasons ago the Seahawks were the only sub 500 team to get into the playoffs? They got in at 7-9. So that kind of tells you how weak that division is. Well, good answer, Adrian. I agree with everything. I believe that the AFC North and the NFC North are very, very strong divisions, as well as the NFC East. So we do have a similar mindset on that question, at least.
Well, thinking of the NFC North, and in particular Chicago for their kick returners, obviously we all know they have the great Devin Hester, but also, switching back to the NFC West, they also have another great all-round returner as well in Patrick Peterson. So my question for you, young man, is will he go one further this year and break the record for most returns in the season?
Believe it or not, Andrew, I play in a fantasy football league where we draft individual defensive players. We do a D-lineman, a linebacker, and a DB. He was the DB I picked up, and he was probably my leading scorer for the year. You know, he's a dynamic second-year player out of LSU. He comes from the SEC that wins the college championships year after year. So he was just born to play football. And he is a better returner than he is a cornerback. And I know your question is, will he be able to set the NFL record? And I did send you last year a clip of him on YouTube with some of these unreal returns. And a lot of them were actually game, like he would end the game with a game-winning touchdown return. So he's just so dynamic and so exciting to watch. But, you know, I think now that his talent set has been shown that he will receive the Devin Hester treatment. And the fact that when a punter gets out there, he's going to angle the punt towards the sideline, if not kick it out of bounds, or they'll punt it so high that pretty much the whole coverage team will have him circled by the time he catches it, and he'll probably be forced to call a fair catch. It's funny, though, because I just heard him quoted in ESPN saying that to him, calling a fair catch is the equivalent of, like, running out of bounds. Like, he refuses to do it, but I'm afraid he's going to be forced to do it. I think the number of touches he'll have with a good running lane and some good visibility without having to call a fair catch will be very limited, sadly, because I think it's one of the most dynamic football players in the league, and probably one of the more exciting football plays is the punt return. So, unfortunately, man, the team schemes take over the actual individual talent with that.
And I suppose it doesn't help as well that as of last season, with the kickoff being moved to the 35, again, I suppose his chances are going to be even more limited because they will try and find the back of the end zone.
So, yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely, and it'll be up to Arizona on whether or not they'll actually get him more involved, even on the offensive side of the ball. That should be interesting.
So, like a similar switch to Hester as well, then you think maybe they'll...
Yeah, get him the ball on a reverse or two and so forth like that. So, should be interesting. Speaking of dynamic playmakers, last year, Adri, we had three of the top running backs all have season-ending injuries, and Jamal Charles and Adrian Peterson having a ACL surgery, and then Darren McFadden, I believe, having something wrong with his ankle or foot. They are all back. Granted, some are further along the rehab process than others, but which one of those three do you think will have the biggest impact?
Well, I do see that you happen to leave out someone there that happened to get taken down in week 10. not that I would remember being a Bills fan or anything.
But, Fred Jackson, you got me.
To be in the top three leading rushers in the league by the name of Fred Jackson, who also got taken down early through injury. So am I right in thinking that I'm going to have to leave him out of
no,
chance?
No, you're right. That was shame on me that I forgot a top three running back, and heaven forbid he would be a Bill running back. So yes, absolutely include him.
Okay, well, I have to say, Adrian Peterson, I'm not sure what's happening with him this year. He seems to be doing things that are all kinds of crazy, and it's just when a big running back's in the news, I'm thinking back to say C2J last year, made the news because of his holdout, and obviously wanted a bigger contract. Didn't play, I don't think, till about week 4 or 5, something like that. When he did come in, he was nowhere near the running back he was, and I was gutted I had him in my fantasy team. And I'm thinking something similar might happen to Peterson this year, purely because, I don't know, he's just gone off the rails with all the press coverage he's had recently. So I'm not sure about him, but Jamaal Charles and Darren McFadden. Jamaal Charles did start off to have a great season, and again, he was one of those that I remember picking up on the year before last in his rookie season, and thinking, yeah, next year, have him in my fantasy team, because towards the end of his rookie season, if memory serves, that's when he came on leaps and bounds for Kansas and was making some big plays. And Darren McFadden is just a phenomenal back. He's another... If he wasn't injured last season, how many people would have drafted him in the top 10 for their fantasy running backs this year? I think he's outstanding. With Oakland as well, let's face it, they've got Carson Palmer and a few receivers that aren't really household names. And I think he's going to be taking a lot of the load for Oakland this year. So... for me, I would say it would be between McFadden and Jackson. But as I'm allowed to have Jackson in my answer, I think you know where this is going.
We're talking about Jackson, CJ Spiller, when he filled in, was rather solid. Will he be able to touch the field with Jackson out there?
I think the idea is, I know what you mean, and last year CJ Spiller did a phenomenal job filling in for Jackson. I mean, he had some really, really good games towards the back end of last season. And from what I understand from Coach Gailey and the press coverage that I've seen, they're looking to try and work it so that they both get, they both have their roles within the offense. So whether that be predominantly, I would imagine Jackson taking a lot of the touches directly from quarterback, and maybe putting Spiller in the slot, obviously maybe playing them both in 5 receiver sets, things like that. They're just going to try and get them, they know what a quality playmaker Spiller is, and they're going to try and get him more involved in the offense. And personally, I would like to see situations where they try and confuse the opposing defense by, if we were to line up say with 3 receivers, having Jackson out as one of the receivers and Spiller in the backfield, realistically, how many people would be expected to run because they know Jackson's a threat? So just try and mix it up a little bit and try and play with the defense's mind by mixing their positions around, or even, same again, sort of have Spiller in the backfield and actually use Jackson as a slot receiver and have it as a pass play and see what happens.
Really. I love it. Sure you shouldn't be an offensive coordinator for your Bills?
Yeah, because... basically, my main play on Madden is deep right, and on the newer versions of Madden, that doesn't work very well. Recently, gotcha. Being quarterback for my flag team, I threw 3 interceptions. So I think
Well, good, man, and I can't agree more with your answer on the running back. If I had to pick anyone, it'd probably be Darren McFadden. From what I hear, he's come back very angry, very hungry, and I think I saw a stat that had he stayed healthy for the rest of the season, he would have broken 1,800 yards, so he'd have been up near 2,000 yards. So he's definitely a very strong back that I'm looking forward to seeing running people over and running away from people at the same time. So, Adri, it was a joy, man. I'm sure these conversations will definitely peak and spruce up a little bit as we get into the intensity of the football year in 2 weeks here, and will definitely be some... interesting conversation we have.
Definitely. Well, before you go, young man, I do have a quick curveball for you. I have another question that I would like to ask on the spot. I'm going to give my answer, so hopefully we don't come up with the same. But from you, I would like your sleeper team to make the playoffs. Now, I'm going to make that harder because I'm going to give you mine first. And my sleeper pick for the playoffs, I really fancy the Panthers this year. With everything Newton did last
you
year,
suck.
With the resurgence of Steve Smith, I honestly think they're gonna. Sorry.
Oh, you suck, man! You of course have picked the team, my hometown team, where I'm living right now, man. That's the first team that came across my mind when you said it, and of course you picked the Panthers.
Absolutely. See, I wanted to throw a curveball out there. See, I knew you'd be thinking Panthers, and I'm thinking the same thing. So, aside from the hometown Panthers, young man, what are your thoughts?
Oh, that's a tough one. Well, A, thank you for picking the Panthers. I definitely think they're going to be a better team. I think they'll be closer to 500, but I'm still not thinking they're playoff ready. Although they would have been my answer if that makes any sense. But they're in a very tough division with the Saints and the Falcons, who they have to play twice a year. And I do think Cam Newton won't have a sophomore slump. He'll actually be a sophomore star, I believe. But their defense is just still has too many holes in it, man. But we'll see. I'm excited to watch them. Let's see. To answer your question, just because the division sucks so bad, I'm going to pick a team out of the NFC West. Yes, the Niners will repeat as division champs, but I think the Seahawks might creep up a little bit. They brought in Matt Flynn from Green Bay, who was Aaron Rodgers' backup for many, many years. And the one time he came in, he threw for, I believe, 6 touchdowns and over 400 yards last season.
Yeah, he broke the Packers' record.
Yeah, now he won't be able to replicate that in Seattle. But, you know, that definitely tells you that he has some game. Plus, they brought in a rookie quarterback from NC State, who then transferred to Wisconsin, named Russell Wilson, who actually, I believe, starting for them this weekend in the third preseason game. Last year, they had Tarvaris Jackson as a quarterback who couldn't get the ball to anybody. So I think with a better quarterback behind center, it will make for a much more effective offense. It will open some more gaps for Marshawn Lynch. It will allow Cindy Rice more room down the middle of the field. Hell, they even brought in Terrell Owens, who, by the way, can't catch the ball anymore. But you never know if he'll be able to get his act together. So their defense is always tough. Pete Carroll, I respect him as a coach. He always gets his guys to play hard for him. And I feel like they may surprise some people this year. But excellent question, Adri.
Thank you very much, sir. Well,
and here's mine. I got one for you, just because I thought of it.
EJ, it's been a pleasure as always. I thank you for your time. And I hope everyone has enjoyed the pilot episode of Spitball. And we look forward to catching up with you during the regular season. Thank you very much.
Cheers.